listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. That was our intro for today. Come and get your love. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and this is Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Like I said, my name is Lisa Gerbov. I belong to the Tsimshian Nation, and I grew up in Prince Rupert. And I acknowledge that I am an uninvited guest on the Musqueam territory while I study at UBC. We, the Indigenous Collective, are mindful of this in the production of Unceded Airwaves, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Season 2, Episode 6, and our continued thoughts are with the Heiltsik Nation. After 32 days, the crews had finally lifted the Nathan E. Stewart up from the seafloor on Monday, November 14th. The tug was loaded with 237,000 liters of diesel fuel when it went down. Of that, about 100,000 liters of diesel spilled into the ocean and another 2,000 liters of lubricants. The tug is now sitting on a barge instead of in the ocean, and cleanup is ongoing.
And my name is Nikita Day. I'm a third-year student here at UBC. I'm majoring in gender, race, sexuality, and social justice and minoring in First Nations and Indigenous studies. I am Tahltan from the Tahltan Territory, but I grew up in Smithers, BC, which is located on Wet'suwet'en Territory. This show is put together every week by UBC's Indigenous Radio Collective. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use this weekly airtime to discuss issues and events that are important to us and, of course, entertainment. We are using this week's airtime as an opportunity for our own self-representation. Self-representation in the media is something that Indigenous people do not often have access to, but this gives us an opportunity to define who we are as Indigenous people instead of relying on inaccurate representations of our culture, lived experiences, and identities. It is often difficult to find relatable Indigenous role models and people in the media more generally, so we hope to highlight some awesome Indigenous people doing cool stuff out in the world.
And our goal with this show is to center the voices of Indigenous people and to create narratives that empower our stories. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at Unceded Airwaves, and if you'd like to get involved, you can send us a message on social media. We have an Indigenous Collective meeting tomorrow. It's every Thursday from 4 till 5 p.m. at CITR in the Net on the UBC campus. And as always, we will bring some snacks. So if you're hungry and you just want to come by and hang out with us, that is totally acceptable too. If this show is something that you identify with, then we'd encourage you to come out. Everyone is welcome and there's no experience necessary. If you want to get involved but you're hesitant about being on air, then there are plenty of other ways that you can participate in this collective.
So you can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. And if you have an Indigenous artist that we should know about, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves and we'll do our best to get it on the air. And if we play a song that you send us, we'll give you a shout out on the show. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners, what Indigenous artists you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. And as always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show.
And we have the weekly Unceded events listings to share with you later on in the show as well. We have a special segment coming up from Josh Kiyoki, who is from the Attawapiskat Nation. That is going to be on the Pole of Reconciliation at the Museum of Anthropology. That will be in the second half of the show. And with Transgender Day of Remembrance coming up on Sunday, November 20th, we're going to have a discussion about what this day means. We're going to start off the show with some music and a new track track from DJ Shub, who is a Mohawk artist from Six Nations. He blends electronic beats with traditional powwow music, and he has a new track out called Indomitable, featuring the Northern Cree singers from his first solo EP called Powwow Step. You can check out the video, which was just released a few days ago, that features classic roots. That's up on our Twitter page. Check it out.
Yeah.
So you heard DJ Shub's new song from the Pow Wow Step EP. That was Indomitable. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Musqueam Territory. And up next, we have a song from Leanne Simpson called Road Salt.
You heard Leanne Simpson with Road Salt on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves. And up next, we wanted to talk about Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is coming up on November 20th. Now, this Day of Remembrance is a day to remember transgender and gender non-conforming people who have been killed or drawn to take their own lives due to hatred or prejudice towards transgender people in systems that are systemic and singular, individualized and collective. This day is coming up on Sunday, November 20th, and it serves to raise awareness of hate crimes against transgender people and mourns and honors the lives of those that have been taken too soon. All were victims of gender-based violence. Personally, I hope that this day creates the opportunity for people to express compassion and understanding for transgender people, because in our current society, transgender and gender variant people face difficulties that many people will not face in their lifetime.
But in addition to acknowledging this day of remembrance, we also need to acknowledge that fighting transphobia should be ongoing, beyond the confines of one day. To start this conversation, let's make sure we're all on the same page by setting out some terms. Before we talk about transgender, we need to talk about sex and gender. So sex is a biological construct referring to one's physical anatomy, typically described with the terms male, female, and intersex if a person has both male and female features. Gender, on the other hand, is a social construct which describes a set of traits that a person performs, such as masculinity and femininity.
Transsexual people have a sexual identity that doesn't match their physical sex, while some desire gender-affirming surgery. In a North American Indigenous context, you can also hear another term, which is two-spirit, which is where a person embodies both masculine and a feminine spirit, and this can describe a person's gender, sexual, or spiritual identity.
Transgender is a term that includes people whose gender identity may be opposite to their assigned sex, but can also include people who do not conform to strictly masculine or feminine gender roles. I like to think of transgender people as gender renegades, not conforming to gender stereotypes.
And you can't always assume someone's gender or their pronouns just by looking at a person. So pronouns are the way someone likes to be referred to when they're not in the room. The pronouns that I use are she, her, and hers. So for example, someone could say,
"She had a great show today,"
as an example of how you would use pronouns. But for transgender people, when you use the wrong pronoun, it can actually make the other person feel disrespected, invalidated, dismissed, and or alienated. And it's a privilege to not have to think about how others perceive your gender. If you have this privilege and don't respect another person's gender identity, it can be very hurtful and oppressive. And it's exhausting for trans people. So please be respectful of other people's pronouns.
Just to be clear, gender is independent of one's sexual orientation. There are things that tie gender with attraction, but someone's gender doesn't necessarily imply anything about their sexual orientation. It's important to acknowledge that transgender people face increased forms of gender-based violence.
And here to chat with us today about the importance of Transgender Day of Remembrance is Danielle Thomas of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation and a new member of the Indigenous Collective at CITR. Thank you so much for joining me, Danielle.
Oh, no, thank you for having me, Lisa.
Can you start off by telling me a bit about yourself and telling our listeners?
Well, I'm a member of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation here in North Vancouver, BC, and I have been transitioning over the past several years on hormone replacement therapy. I identify with she and her pronouns, and yeah, I think that's the basics of me so far.
Well, I did a little bit of research into gender and sexuality last night to refresh my memory, but I didn't quite get a grasp on a few of the terms, and so I was really hoping that maybe you could help me out. Can you help us to understand what gender dysphoria is?
Well, the term misalignment is usually what I use to describe what gender dysphoria really feels like. It's when you break down to the basis of difference between sex and gender. Sex is what you're assigned at birth. You are either tagged with a baby blue ribbon or a baby pink ribbon and nothing in between. And gender is what you, how you express your identity to society. However, society doesn't always leave us with achievable expectations. And when your gender identity doesn't align with the sex you were assigned at birth, that can cause a lot of discomfort, distress, anxiety, self-hatred, even self-harm. It's a very complicated feeling, actually, to try and get into, but the easiest way I can put it together is misalignment, not feeling like you are who you are on the inside.
And I think identity is very important to work through for transgender people. There seems to be this myth that identity and gender expression is a choice. Can you elaborate on this?
Well, first of all, I'd like to start off by saying, why would one choose to face such judgment? Why would one choose to face such discrimination, such oppression from not only society, but their communities, potentially even their family and friends? Nobody would choose to put themselves through such distress. Nobody would choose to put themselves in harm's way or live a dangerous lifestyle. And identity, it basically boils down to the idea that you can ultimately choose how you want to dress. You can choose how you want to talk. You can choose what you want to listen to or who you associate with. But you can never choose or force a sense of being on yourself. And believe me, I've tried really hard to force myself to be a male, and it doesn't work. There's no survival in it. It makes you sick.
It probably just doesn't feel good.
No, that's a simple way of putting it.
What does discrimination look like for transgender people? How is it unique from maybe other forms of discrimination? Or maybe how is it similar?
How is it different? Let's see.
Or what does discrimination look like in general for transgender people?
In general, you find it everywhere. You can find it out on the streets. You can find it at home in your community. You can find it at school. You can certainly find it in the workplace or in any sort of legal building or administration. And it's definitely everywhere you look. And how it's different than most discrimination is that, for instance, transgender women in gender discrimination, it comes from the idea that women are inferior. And not too many cisgendered women understand that transgender women also inherit that same gender discrimination, yet have to deal with the added negative effect of stigmas and stereotypes. And for me personally, when I tried to seek employment, it was impossible to find a job. By the time I found a job, it was nearly impossible to keep the job. The reason why they said that they didn't hire me the first two times is because I wasn't passable as a woman and that they didn't want to cause this confusion for the customers. And as time went on and as I did accept the employment and continue to work with them, the moment my superiors found out what it is that I represented, it didn't matter whether or not I was passable by their standards. I was still treated unfairly. It was almost as if the only confusion it caused was those who knew of my transgender status. And it's like you think life's going to be easy. You're going to go out there and face work, and nobody likes to work. But when you have that added bonus of gender dysphoria and discrimination in the workplace, it's pretty tough to deal with.
Yeah, and that sounds like it's very overt as well, something that you face kind of head on.
You almost have no choice to. You have to make a communicator out of this, and it's not necessarily our job to educate everybody on what it means to be transgender, but like you said, we have to face it head on.
So you mentioned a bit about discrimination in the school and in the workplace. Can you tell me a bit, what I'm interested in talking about here is institutional discrimination. For example, I've heard stories about how trans people have had a harder time finding family doctors and have higher medical expenses. Have you had any experience with institutional discrimination?
To some extent. When I first got on hormone replacement therapy, I was basically told that I was A, going to gain some weight, I was B, going to have to quit smoking, and I was C, going to be very emotionally imbalanced and unstable for the first year or so of my transition. Yet the strict guidelines that they had me adhere to was that I had to remain a level head. I had to be, I guess, not crazy by their standards. Otherwise, I would be withdrawn from the program. And if I continue to go on hormone replacement therapy without any monitoring, that can have some very detrimental effects to my health. And long story short, the worst case scenario didn't happen. I did go crazy the first year or so into my transition. It's essentially going through puberty all over again, and you are going to be really emotional. But after that, I lost service with them. I no longer was eligible for their care, and it took me a really long time to find the right type of doctors to look after me. And I'm even educating my general practitioners on how to adequately handle somebody like me. And in terms of institutional, when you have to go to any place that requires your legal birth name or your legal birth sex, it's usually embarrassing. Whenever you have to go to the hospital, if you ever happen to be picked up by the police or anything concerning your legal information, it's a constant reminder of who you were born as, I guess, if that answers your question.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing that. No problem. Just wanted to talk, I just wanted to mention that Transgender Day of Remembrance is coming up on Sunday, November 20th, and this day memorializes people who have been murdered, who have taken their lives because of the hardships that they face in our society. So I just wanted to maybe leave it open for you to any last comments on Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Okay. Many people believe that the trans story is separate. Many people believe that the discrimination we face is not the same as anyone else, but I personally believe that those who are part of a minority group and those who are part of the LGBT community face the same oppressors. And it's wonderful to see trans equality find its place here in this indigenous collective. And pronouns are powerful people. They really are. Every time you misgender somebody, it's like this little shiv in the side of the kidney pushing somebody closer and closer to their very will to live. And it doesn't seem like much at first, but it's being validated as a respectable member of society. And if we don't allow these mystical individuals the chance to freely express themselves, then really all of humanity is at stake. Those who do face discrimination and oppression on a regular basis, we are on the same team. We are a part of the same situation. The trans story is really all of our story.
And I think it's also important to add that we can all help by supporting trans people and standing up for them whenever the occasion calls for it. So if you know of a transgender person, it's always good to check in with them once in a while just to see how they're doing. And especially if they're showing signs of anxiety, loneliness, or depression, take a genuine interest in your fellow human being and make sure that you're contributing positively to their health and wellness. Danielle, we are so thrilled that you have come on the air today to talk to us about this very important topic.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm so excited to hear more from you in the coming weeks.
I'm excited to share.
Awesome. So we're going to check out some commercials here, and we're going to have another song coming up in just a second. Stay with us.
The showdown, high noon. Men dressed all black, yo, punk rock platoon. Outlaws, shedding blood.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season 2. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Chris Dirksen with New Woman Song featuring Jennifer Kreisberg. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves at 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Musqueam Territory. Just to let you know, we have a segment coming up that has very sensitive content about residential schools. So if you're triggered by this, please feel free to change your dial and come back at 2 p.m. for music for The Observant with Emily. But continuing on with the program, this segment was put together by Josh Keoki of the Attawapiskat First Nation. He visited James Hart on one rainy afternoon near the Museum of Anthropology in and in some parts of the interview, you can actually hear the rain in the background. You can hear carving happening because they are literally right beside the pole. So up next, we have an interview with James Hart on the Pole of Reconciliation.
Welcome to Unceded Airwaves on 101.9 FM CITR, broadcast to you from the unceded territories of the Hunkaminer-speaking Musqueam people. I'm Josh Keoki, and recently I had the honor of speaking with renowned Haida artist James Hart, who right now is on the grounds of the Museum of Anthropology here at UBC, heading up his latest project, A Pole of Reconciliation. He agreed to chat with us about the significance of the Pole of Reconciliation, the legacy of residential schools, and the storytelling potential of his art. Take a listen.
Before I get too ahead of myself, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm James Hart from Haida Gwaii. I'm one of the hereditary chiefs from that part of the country. And proud to be down here on the unceded territory of the Salish people, you know, the Musqueams and the guys from North Van, the Capilano area. And so I feel kind of protected in a sense. It's kind of interesting to see that people are paying attention these days to all that stuff. And, you know, you grow up fighting for these rights, and it's really nice to see these people and how far along they are with their fight and in the political scheme of things. It's pretty cool, actually.
So this is the Reconciliation Pole, I've heard it called.
Yes.
Can you tell us like a bit about it, I guess? Like what is it? What's it all about?
Well, it was, so the idea of the pole come up, and the idea of titling it Reconciliation. It's perfect. That's exactly what I want to do, right? So, and so I started thinking about it and what it meant to me and all this stuff. And because there's reconciliation going on across the country, so there's many forms of it and different avenues or different approaches to it. And so I wanted to say what I knew about it. And I didn't want to start saying stuff I didn't really know about.
So with this pole, the idea behind it being reconciliation, when, or I guess how did that idea come about that you would do a pole that would come here to unceded Musqueam territory about reconciliation?
Well, the title was Reconciliation, so my mind starts clicking away on ideas and what I wanted to, how I wanted to approach it and tell the story on the pole. So I thought it out in my mind what I wanted to do, and then I put it on paper to scale, and then I started scaling it up, getting my measurements right and fiddling around with the drawing, and then reconciliation then wasn't the way it is now. Like there's so much attention being paid to it now in all areas, in a sense. Canada seems to be pushing on reconciliation a lot. But this wasn't just before. This was, we agreed on it and we're moving on it, and then it started coming out, reconciliation. So it worked out to be a real nice thing.
Do you think the story you're telling with this poll is different from, I guess, Canada's idea of reconciliation, like
I don't policies? Know. And I'm not trying to smoothen any edges. Those guys are. They're trying to soften the blow, in a sense. And I find that's not right, because that's not true. And you talk to the people that survived this stuff and what they were going through, and that, I mean, this was a tough project, because stuff like that's unraveling all the time. You know, I'm hearing more and more from the different people that experienced it and the stories they heard and things like this, and told me about their experiences. And And it's tougher and tougher. And then you start realizing how this program was designed from Canada, designed this program to hurt everybody across the country. It wasn't to help, man. It was to destroy and hurt. And it did. And it did a lot of damage to us. But we're here today. And we still want to move forward, and we are moving forward. It's like we want to move forward with Canada, right? And it's something they can't just turn off. Like, this is reconciliation. So what? Canada's spending so much time on it. Now they can't say, we spent enough time on it, let's move on. It doesn't work like that. Because the stuff that's gone on in the past has to be paid attention to, and then we work it out and then move forward together. And that's historic in the sense, like, it's long lasting. It's not going to just go away. It's there. It's part of our life. It's part of their life too. They're the ones that caused it and they designed it like this. So it's like we got lots of work to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is that working together? Or do you think that's part of the process of making this poll as an artistic process? Because you were talking earlier about raising the pole, like the community coming together to raise it.
Yeah.
And as you heard earlier, you had invited people to come hammer in copper nails.
That's right.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the copper nails, you know, one thing I know in my mind was they weren't talking about the kids that passed away at the school very much. You know, I wasn't hearing anything. And then when I did hear something, they did the commission stuff, and I guess that's the records they have. I was only showing just over 6,000. That's all across Canada, and that's not right. And so I figured, but as the guy was handing in the report on that, he was also putting it down on the desk saying there could have been well over 10 times the amount. And, you know, so he knew that more kids passed away at the schools, but he has to play ball with the records and stuff like this and set it down like that. And so I'm not into softening any edges here. I want people to know, because that's a horrendous part of it all, how many kids passed away at the school. If it happened to the outsiders that their kids started dying at the school, they would have did something about it right away. They wouldn't have let it go that bad. I mean, then we find out that, you know, all the time I heard stories about these right from my grandfather, my great uncles, his brothers and sisters. They went to Kokolitsa, and that's the residential school here. We fastened it after that one. And so they went there, right from them to all my partners that went to the residential school, like in Edmonton and Port Alberni and Lurt Bay and stuff. They talked about not having enough food. They're always kind of hungry all the time. So they used to run off and steal, raiding gardens and snaring rabbits, whatever they could to get more food, right? And that was all of them saying that. My great uncle, you know, they left soccer and that. They learned how to play soccer at these schools. They loved that game and said, you know, we're always hungry. You know, when they play sports and they say, we're always hungry. And then in the last, year and a little bit, they find documentation on how they starved the kids. They wanted to starve the kids on purpose. They're experimenting with them and everything else with that, you know, starving. And there's a lot more to it than that, you know, what I know about it, and the medicines and all this stuff. And I think just, so the program even gets thicker and thicker as you get into it, you know, and it's like, man, it's like really quite hurtful to hear all this stuff and what they're doing. And that's just one thing. That's just the schools that was the approach they did on with our kids, taking the kids away from their parents, and so it's culture and language, the whole show. And then the hospitals they built for our people, you know, and how they used to treat them in there and stuff like that. You hear all about this, all those stories. And then the introduction of smallpox to us, you know, wiped us out. And they're doing that all over. So it's like, this is just one part of the whole picture, and it's like, and that's a huge part of it. But we're still here, and we want to move forward together. You know what I mean? I mean, I'd rather work with other nations and stuff like that, mind you, and things we could still, I mean, what is it do we want, you know? What do we want? Good food, good air, good water. That's good enough for me.
With this, I mean, radio is a pretty limited visually. Could we like maybe walk through it and talk about the like what you've got carved in the pole, the story you're telling here?
Okay, get back to the nails.
Oh, yeah, the nails.
You did mention that, I was getting to it.
Well, I figured.
But it slipped. So the nails are, each copper nail that you're going to see in this pole, I'm going to put 57, not me. I mean, with help with other people like you, hammering nails. 57,200 copper nails in the pole, and each nail will represent a child that passed away. I mean, there is more than. It's just, all I can say is more than, and so that's what the representation would be on the copper nail, with the copper nails on this pole. In the end, the copper will help preserve the wood, too. Copper has that ability, and so it won't let moss and stuff grow on it, and so it'll last longer. But that's the idea of the copper nails. So I'm asking people that come from that era, or kids, or, you know, to hammer youth. I like youth hammering, even little guys that hammer some nails in, and it's all about that. It's all about the kids that passed away at these schools. And people, elders now, but they're, when they're going to these schools, the men, there's some men I just met recently, they were the bigger kids in the school, and so they would get called upon to dig the holes. And then this one woman from home, she's an elder now, she was one of the bigger girls at the school, so they used to call her. They'd come and wake them up during the night to do this work, and she'd have to wrap bodies in these like sheets, and they'd bury them in these sheets, right? And kind of an old night work. And so they're the ones telling me about numbers and stuff and graves, and they're still finding graves and things like that. And they know where they are, you know. And well, part of that history, right? Truth and reconciliation. So it's like, if they're exposing that, that's pretty cool, that they're actually paying attention to what had taken place for real. Like, this stuff is real. It's not a story. It's for real. And so the nails, that's what that means. So the way it works, you got the residential school just about halfway up. And I made it look like where the sides are, you know, we have to put the sides on the, where it's flattened out. We'll bolt them, bolt it all together. Then it'll be like plunk. I'm making it look like it was plunked on our heads, which it was, right? And then, so that's, this is the time before residential school, so we got the bear mother story, the shaman with the, doing rituals for our salmon returning, and then the raven up there, he's our trickster, our story. He's given us so much in our life, you know, fresh water and daylight and stars and all, the whole, everything, salmon, you know what I mean? So I got him in there, and then you got residential school, which the people are putting copper nails in. I think we'll cover just about the whole thing with copper nails. And then it moves up to where there's kids standing on this kind of a disc sort of a thing. But that's all the kids that were going to the schools, and they're kind of hanging on to each other. And I got actually one on the backside behind them, and he's laying there, and that's representing one of the children that passed away, so it has death in there too. And then you got a cool part about that is I'm getting different artists from across Canada come and carve a face.
Okay.
So there's going to be an East Coast fella, Maliseet, coming out, I think he's Maliseet, and then Anishinaabe, and then a Cree, and then we got different people, and an Inuit fellow did that Inuit face up there, so we'll have them, all the kids' faces will be different, representing different parts of Canada, right? And so then I got above them the spirit figures, I call them, they're guardian figures, spirit figures, they're bear, eagle, Thunderbird, killer whale, and that's water, land, air, and supernatural, right? Water meaning the sea. So there's a representation from each area, and they're the spirit figures that we're looking out for. Kids, even though they're under the kind of pressure. And then above that, though, above the spirit figures, I got the family unit getting stronger. Right? There's a family unit, man, woman, wife, and husband, and then children, people representing the children, two boys, two girls. And that's representing the family unit getting stronger today. And they're wearing robes, and one will be the Chilkat Nahin style, and then the Raven's Tail, old weaving style. So I'm going to put the copper nails in parts of that robe, too. I'm not going to cover the whole thing, but parts of it, so we're still wearing that, you know what I mean? Like, that's part of our who we are yet today and what had gone on. And then above that, you got that swirly part, and that's representing water in a sense, because above that goes the canoe and the longboat, and that's both side by side facing forward, meaning they're moving forward together. We are moving forward together. That's the hope. We unravel it all and talk it out and work towards a future. And then the column, we'll have on the column four coppers with colors red, white, black, and yellow, representing the different peoples. The medicine wheel. And then you got on the very top of the column, it's going to be an eagle bolted down with brackets sitting up there. And that's just before it takes off, and that's representing our future, our future days. There's more underneath. I got this figure behind this. If you get down on your hands and knees, you can see this figure behind the head there in the inside. Then on the backside here, there's an area I got to put something yet. I saved it for an idea that's still coming. I'm thinking I might put the backside of the house on that side, and you know what I mean.
Was there anything else you wanted to say about reconciliation, bowl carving?
Well, I'm really happy I get a chance to say something about this in this way, because it also helps out with creating another platform for people to stand and say something. Because that's, for me, all I want to do is when the time comes is just thank the people I need to thank for helping out. And this project's taken 2 years. And what I tell you, if you come up to me and ask me how long it's taken me to do this, I'll say, this one has just taken over 10,000 years. And that's how I approach it. And then I go from there. I say, physically, it's like 2 years. And we've been at it for 2 years, and that's six of us. And as you see right now, there's just two of us. Today, as we lost two guys there on a study trip to Chicago, Field Museum, having fun looking at our ancestral pieces and rooting around in the notes and stuff. But they're having a great old time. So I'll get one of them back next week. And the other fella has to go home because we're supposed to be finished. And so his plans were like that. And so, but these guys were undercover as of last Thursday. Otherwise, we're 2 years outside in the weather, wind and storm and rain and everything else. And you were blowing down your neck. You emptied out your sleeves and stuff like that. And they're pretty good, you know. And that's John Brent Bennett over here, still with me. My son, Gwalaga Hart. He's out on a study trip, he'll be back. Then John Edenshaw, he's helped for a better part of the project. Then Derek White, who did a lot of the fine carving on here, he did the residential school and things, and he didn't come down to the city. And then I had another fellow, Leon Ridley, who did a lot of the work with us on this project too, and but he's not good in the city, so he stayed home. And then two other fellas, my youngest son Carl Hart, he began on this project, did the boats and the eagle, roughing them in. He did the finish the boats off, and then he's gone from us. He's in the other side now. And then the youngest guy on the crew was Brandon Brown. And he started out on the project and skinning the log and getting it ready or chopping it into shape and stuff. And but anyway, I thank him for being part of it too. And so all the guys were really a good crew that didn't balk at the weather. You know, we just suited up, jumped out in the weather and got to work. And the guys, I don't know, that's it. You need a good crew for stuff like this because it's hard work. And but they're learning too. Showing them
Discorder.
That magazine from CITR 101.9 FM
presents a showcase of emerging Vancouver-based hip-hop artists Friday, November 18th at the Media Club.
The lineup is comprised of some of the most talked about and should be talked about hip-hop artists in Vancouver.
Including So Loki, Missy D, Romy, Something August, Spotty Joseph, and Freeman Young, with CITR's Crimes and Treasons DJing and emceeing this 19-plus event.
We them boys! Be sure to come check us out. We're Crimes and Treasons Radio. We're going to be hosting and DJing at the Media Club. Be sure to come check us out.
Crimes and Treasons.
For more information and tickets, visit discorder.ca.
Tune in to La Fiesta every other Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. with your host, Nick Arana. Listen to internationally acclaimed musica latina caliente that makes your body move and your heart beat.
All right, you heard a segment just before the break there. That was Josh Kiyoki with a segment with James Hart on the Pole of Reconciliation, which is being carved here on the UBC campus at the Museum of Anthropology. We're very appreciative that James took the time to chat with us at Unceded Airwaves. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and I'm joined in the studio by Nikita Day, and we have today's Unceded events listings before we let you go. So just to start off, in Vancouver, there is the Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is organized and taking place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. There's going to be a memorial for people who have been murdered, oppressed, marginalized, and for those who have even taken their own lives. That's happening on Sunday, November 20th from 3:30 until 5:30 p.m. at the theater room on the main floor of the Carnegie Community Center. That's at Main and Hastings there. And so you can find all the information on accessibility on our Facebook page. We're going to post all the info for you there.
And then on campus, the Pride Collective at UBC and the AMS Sexual Assault Support Center is also inviting you to participate in discussion, expression, and resistance. So today, November 16th until Monday, November 21st, visit the visual display in the lowest level of the nest from 2 p.m. onward each day. And then on Monday, November 21st, there will be a couple workshop discussions. There is an intra-trans solidarity discussion. 3 to 4:30 in the Nest, room 2504. This will be a space for non-cisgender identifying folks to discuss solidarity and the Transgender Day of Remembrance facilitated by the Pride Collective. There's also a trans allyship discussion happening 3 to 4:30 in the Nest, room 2506, and this is open to both trans, gender nonconforming folks, and allies, and will be a space for discussion on the ways to ally ourselves against transphobia. And this is facilitated by the Sexual Assault Support Center. Last, there is a Transgender Day of Remembrance vigil and open mic 5 to 7 p.m. in the Hatch Art Gallery, which is on the second floor of the Nest. They will light candles and encourage folks who wish to share words, song, space, or other art with us here. To sign up for our open mic at the beginning of the evening, a link to the accessibility information is available on the Unceded Events Facebook page.
And that's the Unceded Airwaves Facebook page. We just use the Unceded Events listing, sorry. But there is also a lecture going to be happening on access to justice and Indigenous laws. That's with Val Napoleon, who is a Law Foundation Professor of Aboriginal Justice and Governance at the University of Victoria, and Hadley Friedland in the Faculty of Law at the University of Alberta. That event is happening on Wednesday, November 23rd, from 5 till 6:30 at a Green College Coach House. The speakers will be exploring how Indigenous legal aspirations and legal reasoning exploring form justice today and how Indigenous justice concepts might reconcile with Canada's state justice concepts. You can learn about access to justice by joining the discussion through Green College's interdisciplinary speaker series on access to justice, and we'll post a link to the event details on our Facebook and Twitter pages. And that's all that we have for today on Unceded Airwaves. My name is Lisa Gerbov.
And I'm Nikita Day.
And we were your hosts today, co-hosts for season 2, episode 6. And I think we covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah. We discussed a lot of really important things.
Yeah, for sure. And just before we leave you off today, we wanted to play a song. Actually, this one was Nikita's pick.
I love this song. It's such a good song.
This is Digging Roots, Spring to Come. And we're going to post a link to this on our Twitter page with the hashtag Unceded Music. So check it out.
Spring coming right along. Oh, about a nice way to ask her for a song. So I asked the mountain if she might wanna move me. She said tell the rivers to wake up the lake. See, rivers take it from sky into home base. And yellow belly hawks know how to kill taste. Singing for the spring is like kissing pretty things. And changes like fire, changes like wings. Birch bark and maple and seas of black hair. Sing, rape, and sing, show, show, now feel the air.
Oh, yeah.